offering our most loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's episode of the Afternoon Satsang. This is Prem from Team Radio Sai, and with me is Sai Prakash, like last week. And like last week, we're going to continue our discussion on the book Conversations with Bhagwan Shri Sathya Sai Baba, a compilation of various interactions that Dr. John Hislop has had with Swami, and also interactions and interviews that he was a witness to. We've been going through these chapters for many, many months, close to a couple of years. Arvind and I join you on this program. Past few episodes, I've had the pleasure of Brother Sai Prakash's company, and we will be continuing that. Many of these themes, one thing that occurs is, are repetitive in some ways, in the sense that there are discussions about desires, about what is liberation, what is the spiritual life, how to control anger, and so many such. The beauty is the answers vary. The core remains the same. You can see that Swami is guiding all the people to think along the same lines, but the answers themselves may be different based on who is asking the question. As we have said many, many times on this program, that's the difference between an instructor and a master. An instructor or a teacher might give you answers for your questions, but a master answers the person asking the question. And that's why many times these answers are different. And in that same vein, we'll have a few discussions which have taken place earlier, but the discussion here is unique in its own way because Swami is answering the questions of a different devotee. But before we go into all of that, let's invite Sai Prakash to join all of us. Sai Ram, Sai Prakash.
As always, it's a great pleasure to be a part of this discussion because, as you rightly said, the answers are so different, and but the core is the same. That's true in every, it's like the end is one, but there are several paths that right. lead up to the same end result. And in fact, I remember one of the devotees telling me that in one of the interviews, Swami asked, "Do you want liberation? Do you want moksha?" Mm-hmm. And the devotee said, "Yes, Swami, of course we want." "Yes, Swami, we want." And Swami said, "Then there is only one thing you have to do. And that is, do not follow anybody." Do not follow anybody. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's such a beautiful thing. He said, just follow yourself. Follow your own conscience. Follow what... because each one's path is unique. And there is, I think, in the next section that we may discuss, Swami says that God is a mirror.
Right.
So, in fact, it's such a beautiful concept because based on what your level of understanding is and based on what you can comprehend, his answers and his guidance changes accordingly.
Exactly. And even as a statement as simple as follow yourself,
right,
we'll need a lot of decoding and self-inquiry.
Exactly.
What is it to follow? What do you mean by follow? And what do you mean by self?
Right.
What is it that you will have to follow? And all of that is involved in that process.
Right.
So we went through that portion in the conversation where, you know, Hislop records about an interview that he was part of.
Right.
Where Swami speaks to a Nigerian devotee. Mm-hmm. And Swami, of course, gives him with a ring with an image of Lord Jesus.
Right.
And then changes it back to that of Swami and then changes it again. So that was the portion we were going through. At the end of that session, Swami asks, "Are there any questions?"
Yes.
And Swami specifically says, "Spiritual topics."
So yes.
That's something that's that Swami would often tell even when his conversations with students.
Mm-hmm.
"Do you have any spiritual questions? Do you have any spiritual doubts?"
Mm-hmm.
So that's the question that Swami is asking. And one of the devotees asked this question.
Right.
"How to live with worldly desires which rise endlessly?"
Mm.
And who doesn't have this doubt?
Right.
So that is the question that he poses to Swami. How to live with worldly desires mm-hmm. which rise endlessly? And the answer that Swami gives to that is, turn all wishes and desires to God. Then all will be well. Mind is like a key to the door of a prison. Turn it to the left, the door opens and the person is free to turn towards God and spiritual life. Turn the key to right and the person is locked into worldly life. Turn every wish and every desire into desire to be with God and be happy. So that was Swami's response to that question.
It sounds like a very simple answer, but
right, absolutely.
It has all the wisdom that we ever need to know.
Then absolutely. In fact, in the previous section, Swami had given that explanation, right? When somebody asked about what is a spiritual life, Swami pointed to a line on the wall.
Right.
And he said, there is God above and there is human life below. The choice is always there, as Swami would say. At every point, the choice is there. As one of the students who had the opportunity to stay with Swami for many, many years, he said, you know, whether you are in the same room on the same mandir with Swami or you are miles and thousands of miles away, every day will present such choices.
Right.
Will you choose to obey Swami? Will you choose to do things the way Swami would want? Will you choose to act in a way that it would please Swami? Or you will act otherwise.
Correct. Right?
And I think that's what Swami says. Can you turn all desires to God?
Mm.
Right? Swami could have said, yes, desires are bad, give them away. Swami is talking about much more, I wouldn't say simpler, but something which is within our abilities, that is to sublimate all your desires by turning them to God.
Which is more practical and pragmatic, right, as well. In fact, talking about desires and talking about turning them towards God, this is something which I was just trying to rationalize in my mind. Of course, there is no reference of what I was thinking about. But, you know, it's like a collected wisdom from across Swami's discourses and across several this thing. If you want to turn your desires to God, I would look at it as three stages. See, because in spirituality, everything is based on the level of your evolution and your commitment to the path, I would say.
Right.
Like Swami would say, are you interested? If you are interested, everything gets done. So based on your level of interest and your level of achievement or your level of this thing. So there are several layers, several, I would say, levels. And I just thought of three levels. One is when you're within the grasp of the senses and the mind. So the mind directs the senses towards the world. See, that's what Swami is saying here. When you turn it towards the world, when you turn it right, it gets locked. When you turn it to the left towards God, it gets freed. So when the senses, when the mind is controlling the senses and it directs it towards the world, that is a level one. Then we have desires that are turned towards God with a form, with attributes, with so that, you know, the mind is able to contemplate on these, on the form, on the attributes of the divine.
Right.
And you're able to relate to, like Swami would often say, that if a buffalo has to contemplate on who God is, that buffalo is going to think of God as a huge buffalo.
Cosmic buffalo.
As a huge buffalo with big horns and with big, you know, form, etc. So in the same way, if a human has to contemplate on who God is, he is going to contemplate based on his understanding.
Right.
And so the second step, I would say, is turning your desires towards God with a form which is relatable, with a form that is relatable to you. And then, of course, the final stage is when you reach a state of wisdom and when you acquire a state where you become desireless because you identify with the cosmic power. And, you know, it's very interesting because I just thought, let us see what our modern Google guru says. So I went to Google and I just typed desires. Where do desires come from? And, you know, you have several supplementary questions and answers and all. There's a very interesting passage which says, there are two questions. What is the deepest human desire and what is man's greatest desire?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So here it says, when you say, what is man's greatest desire, it says immortality.
Okay.
Immortality is man's greatest desire. And that is perfectly in tune with what Swami is saying, and that is something which is beyond and which we strive for. But what is the deepest human desire? This is very interesting. It is in how to win friends and influence people. Dale Carnegie, that he's an American writer and lecturer from the 19th century. So he writes, there is one longing almost as deep, almost as imperious as the desire for food or sleep, which is seldom gratified. That is what Sigmund Freud calls the desire to be great. It is what is called the desire to be important. And he says, as much as your basic necessities of food and requirement for survival is a desire in itself, there is this desire to be great, a desire to be important and to be known. And if you look at the current social media, for example, that is a direct reflection of that particular desire. It is like actually almost fanning the desire of trying to show that you are a so-and-so, you are important and you are here and you, this is what you're doing. And it is all about yourself.
Right.
So I was just looking at it, and it's a very interesting observation and perspective. At the same time, there is another research which was done by Professor Stephen Rees and team from the Ohio University, which says, They have come out with something called a new theory of motivation. So what motivates you? What are the desires that motivate you? What pushes you? And this is all published in a book called Who Am I? Interesting title, because it sounds so spiritual and it's perfectly in tune with the topics we are dealing with. And it's very interesting because it says they had actually done the research involving more than 6,000 people. And they narrowed down desires into 16 basic desires.
Okay.
So they say these are 16 basic desires which define all meaningful behavior. So 16 basic desires. What are the 16 basic desires? The desires are power. Independence, curiosity, acceptance, order, saving, honor, idealism, social contact, family, status, vengeance, romance, eating, physical exercise, and tranquility. So what is interesting is yes, we have, he says, combinations of these desires is what runs today's day and age. And he says different people have different combinations of these desires and different levels and all. But what is really interesting, the observation that they make, they say is, except for desires based on idealism and acceptance, rest of the desires are genetic. So they say rest of the desires, like for example, desire of power, independence, curiosity, saving, honor, social contact, family, status, all these are almost genetic in the sense that these desires are based on survival. These desires are based on, to survive and thrive.
Okay.
At a physical level. So at a physical level, you have to survive and thrive. And so these desires are almost genetic in that sense, because that comes all the way from the animals. From the time evolution started, these are basic desires and instincts that, support are always there. So the only two desires which are based on idealism and acceptance, these are not genetic. So I would say that idealism and acceptance, in a sense, are beyond the scope of the mind.
Okay.
So everything that is at the level of the senses and the body are, in a sense, hardwired, if you may call it. Hardwired based on survival, based on animal instincts, based on that kind of a background. But the moment you say acceptance and idealism, these are which come from beyond the mind.
There is a very beautiful letter that Swami had written. I was trying to locate that, where Swami starts off by saying, do you have spiritual craving?
Hunger, spiritual hunger. Yes.
It's a very beautiful letter in which Swami says, you know, one of the very important points that Swami makes there is, you will find that however much you might attain what you crave for and what you aspire for, you will find a discontent which persists, which is never, you know, quenched. Swami says that's because all discontent can be completely removed only with that spiritual attainment.
Right.
And having just completed the 8th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita in the other program, can't help but have some overtones of that.
Right.
Because that entire 7th and 8th chapter is about desire turning towards God.
Oh, is it?
Right?
That's
because
beautiful.
In the 8th chapter, very beautifully, you know, Krishna says, you know, you think of me in the last moments of your life, you will reach me. And whatever you think of in the last moments of your life, you will reach that having thought of it throughout your life. So he says, whatever you crave for in your lifetime, that is what you will think of in the last moments of your life, and that is what you will attain in the next birth.
Right.
And before that, actually, in the previous chapter, when Krishna is speaking about, you know, the different types of devotees, the arti, artharti, jignasu, and jnani. At that point, actually, Krishna makes this statement that those who have led good lives, you know, he says it's not wrong to have desires because it is part of human nature. Those who have followed the good path in trying to fulfill those desires and aspirations, they will find that there is no way you can do that, right? There is no way those all desires can be satisfied, however much you might struggle and however good you have been. So slowly to satisfy those desires, you'll turn to God.
Exactly.
And he says that that thought I will put. And very beautifully Krishna says, you know, let's say you are seeking wealth. You're seeking to be rich. By default, you become a worshipper of Lakshmi.
Right.
Because you are searching for God in that form. Right. So you become a worshipper of that deity. So suppose you seek protection and you're worshipping some form of Mother Kali or some Bhairava or something like that. So you are seeking God's grace in the form of that grace that you are seeking. And then Krishna says, using that same faith, I will come to you.
Beautiful.
And I will turn your desires to me. That is why instead of seeking the same desires from the people who are as deluded as you, you will think of seeking it from God. And having turned that way, you will quickly progress on Artha, Artharti, Jignasu and going towards Jnani, who only seeks the Lord.
Right. In fact, there's a very beautiful episode from the Sri Satyasa Anandadai where Swami has visited Srimati Kannamma and family in their home in Mysore.
Okay.
And Swami, then they say, Swami, you have come for such a short duration. We have a lot of spiritual questions to ask you. Then Swami says, see, I have come for, I have to go to the other place also. But what are your spiritual questions? So he gives time. So they start asking questions because they know that that is one, you know,
way to
keep Swami for some more time in their place. So they start asking some spiritual questions. And Kannamma asks Swami, that is Karuna Ramamurthy.
Karunamba Ramamurthy.
So lovingly called Kannamma. So she asked Swami, Swami, so many years have passed. We have come to you, but we have not made any progress. We are the same. But what is the next stage? I started off by saying that there are stages and levels in spiritual progress. But here Swami says the complete opposite. Swami says, forget your stages. There is no stages. Don't try to, I mean, basically, don't try to rationalize it. Don't try to put it into brackets and pockets and all that. Don't rationalize it. There are no stages. What he says is, make yourself eligible for God's grace. So that is the most important. And then he says, people, devotees like you are my true devotees because the moment you have seen me, you have absorbed me like the blotting paper. So he says, like the blotting paper, you have taken to me. So those who take to me like the blotting paper, they are my true devotees because it does not happen to all. And he says, this is possible only because of merits of several previous births. See, it's only because of the merits earned in several previous births, you people are able to take to me like the blotting paper absorbs the ink. So, that is one of the questions that they ask, and Swami, of course, spends more time with them answering them.
Yes, you know, that's again explained very beautifully by Swami, you know, in the concept of Yoga Bhrashta, where Arjuna asks, you know, whatever you're saying seems very nice,
right,
but doesn't seem to be something that can be achieved in one lifetime.
Exactly.
You know, because there's so many pitfalls and so many challenges. Mm-hmm. What happens if I'm not able to complete that journey in this lifetime?
Correct.
Then Krishna says that, you know, such yoga bhrashtas will be born, will be given a next birth, mm-hmm. where they can not only continue the journey, but can continue it with added fervor.
Beautiful.
He said, that is my blessing. And many times Swami would say this with reference to devotees and students. Mm-hmm. Swami would say they're all yoga bhrashtas.
Oh, right? Is it?
That's the term which Swami would use. In fact, we were having a conversation with Mr. Vinod Kumar.
Mm-hmm.
One of the physical instructors of our college.
The school.
And the school and the college. And he was narrating this very beautiful episode. Because even as I'm saying this, this is not to glorify any community of students or anything like that.
Right.
But the way, you know, Swami put that perspective in his mind. He came, I think, in the year 91 or 92 or something. In the early years, Mr. Dora had brought him.
Right.
Another senior devotee of Swami. Was, I think, the commissioner of police, right? Or DIG
yes,
or something.
Yes.
Some very important post. So he had brought him as a physical trainer for the school students.
Okay.
For one of the sports meets. And Swami called him for an interview and Swami asked him, so how are my students? He said, Swami, your students are phenomenal. They're picking up things like so quickly. Mm-hmm. Their focus is very good. I've worked with children for so many years.
Mm-hmm.
But they're able to pick things so quickly. And he said, if you give me 3 months to train these children, I can take them to state level.
Oh, okay.
Then Swami said, oh, then if I can train them for 6 months, I can take them to national level. Then Swami said, but you saw the crowd which came here. Where were they all from? He said, Swami, they were from all over the world. Then Swami said, their performing here is greater than your state and national level. And he said, yes, Swami, that is true. And then every year he would come and, you know, Swami was very happy with the way he was training. So one of those years Swami told him, you don't come for darshan. You take care of the children, you train them. I will come and see the children and see you there. So then onwards, sports meet time, the gymnastics boys of the school would never come for darshan. Swami would always come. Almost every evening Swami would come. And he says that till today he follows that. That he comes to darshan only on festival days.
Right.
Otherwise, he doesn't come to mandir at all. He's always in the ground training the students.
Correct.
So one particular time, Swami was driving into the stadium to have a, you know, to see the boys practicing, and he used to be very strict, having come from Hyderabad, from a typical training background.
Right.
So he would even you know, physically hit the students to get them to do the right thing. So Swami saw him hitting a student when Swami was entering the compound at the gate. And Swami turned the car and went off.
Oh.
Okay. And then for the entire sports meet season, Swami never came for the practice sessions.
My God.
And he was wondering what happened, something is wrong. And then the sports meet went off well and Swami never spoke to him through the entire season, which was quite uncharacteristic. Then after everything was over, Swami called him for an interview. In the interview, Swami asked him, whom are you training? So he said, Swami, the gymnastics boys. Swami again asked him, whom are you training? So he gave various answers like this. And Swami kept on asking the same question. Whom are you teaching? Whom are you training? And then Swami was not satisfied. Swami went out of the interview room for a round. He was sitting in the interview room. Again, Swami came back and Swami asked, whom are you training? So he said, Swami, I'm training your students. So he thought maybe Swami was trying to emphasize that. Swami again asked, whom are you training? And he fell at Swami's feet. He said, Swami, I know you're hinting at something much more deeper, but I am not able to get it. Please tell me if I've done something wrong. Then Swami said, who do you think comes and becomes my student here? They're all rishis and yogis.
Oh.
After lifetimes and lifetimes of effort, they have come and had this opportunity. How can you hate them like this? So he felt very bad and he fell at Swami's feet and he said, Swami, I'm really sorry. Mm. And he said after that, his way of treatment of the students completely changed.
Right.
He said, I would carry their shoes and keep it in the rack because I would feel, Swami has said, these are all rishis. Mm. These are all great people. Mm. And, you know, and he would get up earlier than all of them and set up the mats for them and do all of that. And 2 years went like this. Then Swami calls him for another interview one day.
Mm.
And Swami says, what is happening?
Mm.
The gymnastics is not as good as it was a few years back.
Mm.
There seems to be a little dip in the performance.
Mm.
So he said, Swami, I don't know. I'm not able to be very strict with the students because after you've said that, I'm being very soft to them. I'm not getting myself to be any strict with them. He said, see, they are rishis only, but you are a guru of the rishis.
Oh,
so you are rishi of rishis.
Mm.
There's nothing wrong. Be strict. So he said, I mean, that hitting and that kind of disciplinary action completely went away. But he became strict after that.
Right.
And you know how beautifully Swami had put just the idea of saying the concept of yoga bhrashta and what Swami had told those devotees. I think even in Anandadayi, Swami says, when Karunamaramurti's mother used to feel very bad,
right.
There is no spiritual rigor in the ashram, there is
correct.
No mantra, there is no japam and tapas and all that.
Mm.
And Swami would often say, you've crossed all of that.
Right.
Swami would say, kindergarten you've crossed and you've come to graduation. Why do you want to go back to alphabets again? This, of course, is something that you and I cannot judge about ourselves.
Right.
Only Swami can give. But I think that's a very beautiful thing. What you mentioned, because when Swami says here, diverting all your desires towards God, being in Swami's physical presence, this was a very concrete practice for us.
Right.
You know, if you go and tell some youngster, 17-year-old, 15-year-old, outside in the world, that you have to turn your desires to God, I think it would make no sense
absolutely,
to that person.
Absolutely.
But it made absolute sense to us.
Right.
In our hostel.
Mm.
You know, when we say getting the first rank or coming first in a race, you could easily convert that to standing in front of Swami as a person receiving a medal, you know, or an art form,
right.
Or any kind of a painting to get Swami's applause or Swami's approval for what you have done.
Right.
So in that sense, I think Swami has brought us to a state where this makes sense. Whether
exactly.
we do it or not, I think that choice Swami is leaving it to us.
Mm.
But at least it makes absolute sense.
And the way he would respond.
Right.
See, for every of these efforts, small efforts that we have made and everything that we sincerely do it with love, he would respond. So automatically that loop would get closed.
Right.
See, for example, in the 1990 summer showers, these concepts, Swami, very deep concepts, but how many of us can actually relate to them? Like Swami said in the Kathopanishad,
right.
The body is compared to a chariot and the horses are compared to the senses. The mind is compared to the reins and the buddhi is the charioteer and Atman is the person who is the master of the chariot. And this is a very beautiful concept. It is an analogy, but very difficult to comprehend. At the same time, Swami would say, if the senses are driven, if the mind drives the senses and the mind is controlled by the senses,
right.
Then it goes outward. So all your vision is outward. And again, very beautifully, Swami defines what is food, what you're taking inside. Is all based on all the five senses. It's not only what you eat. So everything that you take, when the senses are in contact with the objects of the senses, like your eyes see something beautiful. So the sense organ is in contact with the object. So when it sees something beautiful, then there is a desire in the mind. There is an attachment. In fact, it's very beautiful because when I was trying to see, again, where desires come up in the Bhagavad Gita, the two shlokas which come up, which are very, very beautiful, are from chapter 2, shloka 62 and 63.
Mm-hmm.
So, the first one is, Dhyayato Vishayan Punsaha Sangaste Shupajayate Sangat Sanjayate Kamaha Kamat Krodho Vijayate. So, he says, while contemplating the objects of the senses, a person develops attachment for them. And from such attachment, desire develops.
Right.
And from desire, anger rises. So it's almost giving you the kind of the evolution, how a desire comes into a being. So it says, the senses are able to contemplate on the objects of the senses. And because of that, the person develops attachment to that. So something is beautiful, you get attached to that. And because of that, the desire comes into you. And when the desire is fulfilled or not fulfilled, anger comes. So then the next shloka which further elaborates is, Krodhat bhavati sammohaha, sammoha smriti vibramaha, smritir bramshat buddhi nashot, buddhi nashat pranashyati. So he says, in a sense, Krodhat bhavati sammohaha, he says, anger leads to clouding of judgment, which results in bewilderment of the memory. When the memory is bewildered, the intellect gets destroyed. And when the intellect is destroyed, one is ruined. So, in a sense, desires, sense objects and senses are the starting point for a complete ruin of a person. So, it can lead all the way to that. So, desires are so powerful when the mind is controlled by the senses and it is driving outward. The desires are pulled outward. It is very difficult and you get ruined. But at the same time, the same mind, if it is controlled by buddhi, that is the charioteer, and that beautiful discourse in the 1990 summer showers, the entire discourse, buddhi the charioteer, where he elaborates on what is buddhi, the bird of buddhi, beautiful, he says shraddha and then yoga and mahatattvam and then satyam, ritam, there's a beauty, and yoga is the tale. So the whole concept of buddhi, which is, I would say, in direct contact with the Atman, with the pure divine self. So if a desire is directed through the filter of buddhi, then it is going Godward. But if it is directed through the filter of the mind and senses, then it's going outward. I think that is what this analogy from the Kathopanishad says. And Swami has beautifully explained these concepts in the summer showers.
Right. In fact, talking of the Kathopanishad, it's basically the conversation between Nachiketa and Lord Yama.
Right.
You know, where he asks this question, what is this liberation that people talk of?
Mm-hmm.
So there, Yama first speaks about Shreyas and Priyas.
Mm-hmm.
So he says, you know, talking of that analogy of the chariot, he says the road are the sense objects.
Okay.
The horses are the senses. The road are the sense objects, which distract the horses.
Okay.
So he says the first thing that the individual does is fixes the goal.
Mm.
He says the main problem is that the clarity of what the goal is not there.
Right.
So you're lost when you're starting the journey, and you're lost at every step of the journey thereafter.
Mm.
So the thing is, first the goal is fixed, and then you gain control over the chariot to lead it along, and you have to lead it along the same pathway.
Right.
Right. Even though the path is the sense objects, there is no different path.
There's no different path.
You have to lead it along the same pathway and then reach there. And I think that is what Swami very beautifully says here. Turn your desires to God.
Mm.
And, you know, talking of it in a very practical way for us now.
Right.
As Swami would say, that, you know, when physically Swami was there, that ability to please Swami, to get a word from Swami, especially this season, the sports meet season was, you know, completely dedicated for that.
Right.
If you look at it, Swami would speak of Uttarayanam as the time when the mind actually turns towards God. Right. And the way that Uttarayanam is spoken of, I might be wrong in the facts a little. The reason why that Uttarayanam comes and that month of December,
right,
which is referred to as Margari or Margasisha in some calendars,
yes,
that is equivalent to Brahma Muhurtam of the Devas.
Oh.
The year is like one day for the Devas.
Mm-hmm.
So what is Brahma Muhurtam for us in a day comes in that Margari month for the Devas.
For the Devas. So, right?
So that is why that any spiritual activity done in that month is considered very beneficial. And Swami made us practice for sports meet in that month. So that you're doing something which is physically exerting, using your own ideas and everything. But it is all directed towards God.
Towards God, yes.
And leading towards Uttarayanam, where you finally offer everything to God. And Uttarayanam, devotees might not know, it also marks the shift for us in our academic calendar.
Right.
Because till then it's all play and everything. From Uttarayanam, you're suddenly shifting to academics.
Right.
Because a couple of weeks later, you will have your mid-semesters and your CIEs and all that.
Correct.
So that again is also, done with the idea that you cannot go and tell Swami, I was busy with sports meet, so I've done badly in my exams.
Correct.
Right. So in every way, Swami does that. Physically, Swami has done that. So Swami says, now when you look at it, Swami says that same Swami is present as your conscience. And you can sense pleasing Him and displeasing Him.
Correct.
As much as you could do it, in that physical Swami was there. So that option of how are you going to lead your life? Are you going to lead it to please the Swami within? Or just go along the way, however the situations and scenarios takes you? Or follow your mind?
In fact, that song which Swami used to sing very often, Tyagaraja's Rama Kodanda Rama, in that it builds stage by stage. Rama Neenu Nee Vaadu.
Right.
Then finally it says Rama Nato Matladu. Speak to me.
Right.
So in a sense, God is not an abstract concept. Like when you pine, like you very beautifully said, how Krishna said, you take a birth where you are associated with that form of God, with that aspect of God. So if you contemplate on that, He will appear. He will come and speak to you. This is a concrete reality. He said, Rama nato matladu. Means you come and speak to me. Such a beautiful idea. In fact, one of the things which, again in this Satyasa Anandadai, Swami says, of course, this is the sons of Karuna Ramamurthy. So they were deciding what to study next. And they were saying, Swami, this engineering course is very good. Should we do it? But it's maybe very difficult and the teachers are not so good. Swami said, don't worry about all that. The years that are going to come are the years of machines. So this will be very useful for you and you can do that course. Then Swami made a very beautiful statement. He said, if remembering me is so easy for you, everything else is easy for you. He said, you are able to remember me so easily, think of me. If that is easy for you, everything else is easy for you. Everything else is easy. And it was such a beautiful statement. So he says, if you turn your desires to me, everything else is easy for you. And, this brings us to a very important question. Talking of desires still, what is the ideal desire? What is the ideal desire? Like, okay, yes, we have desires. Like we discussed, even from a scientific perspective, people are now talking about desires which are based on survival, desires which are like natural desires and mental desires born out of, higher perspectives in life, like acceptance and, inspiration, etc. So this is a personal experience of my father's, which I thought I could narrate here, because this is Swami directly giving an answer.
Okay.
So when my parents were, I was not yet born at that time, but when they were back in Guwahati, Swami, had inspired this whole routine in the ashram about Omkaram, Suprapatam, morning bhajans, prayers, etc. And since they would, it was a fairly large house, and my father was very insistent on that routine, which he still does to this day. And when he was doing that regularly, some of the children in the neighborhood, some of the parents thought this would be a nice routine for the children. So they would send the children to the house, and over the months or so, about 23 children gathered there. And every morning they would do the morning Omkaram, Suprabhatam, and possibly Nagar Sangeetan, and they would sing bhajans, etc. And these children started doing very well in their exams. And now that encouraged the parents, and they said, oh my God, what is this magic? we have been trying to tell them to study, and then they go and then spend some time in the morning. So the parents were very happy in sending the children there. And all the children had written letters to Swami since my father was coming to Puttaparthi. So he had all the letters with him in his pocket. And couple of times Swami would come and speak to him, and he would invariably forget to give the letters to Swami. And Swami had blessed him with the opportunity to do paintings on the stones. These quotations earlier, right, which were painted on these stones. And due to sun and rain, the paint would fade off, and so it had to be repainted. So one of those days, he was actually sitting there and repainting one of those quotations on the stone, and he had these letters in his pocket, and he was just praying to Swami. And that particular day, Swami came on the veranda, and he was collecting a lot of letters. Now, seeing this, he got reminded that, oh God, I have letters with me in my pocket. And so he prayed to Swami. He said, Swami, these are letters written by these children. Please accept them. And as he was saying that, from the veranda, Swami gave him a direct look, and almost saying, yes, I have heard your prayer. And made straight walk from the veranda, came straight to where he was, and he stretched his hand and said, give the letters. So he took out the letters and gave it to Swami, and Swami took the letters, and Swami said, what do you want? So because these are letters written by the children, and Swami says, what do you want? And immediately his mind went to, oh, my wife is here and she's in the family way and so many other things. And before he could utter those words, Swami said, shh. And he says, the energy with which Swami said that made the desire go back deep into him. It never expressed itself in words. He was just like kind of taken aback. And then Swami explained. Swami said, see, you people come at different points in time in your life, and based on the current circumstances, what is going on, you ask certain things. But, and he said that, but what is it that you should actually ask the Lord? What is the ideal desire? What is that prayer, the ideal prayer that you would have for the Lord? So he paused at that moment, and he was looking the other side and talking to somebody else, and the perfect teacher, he gives you time to absorb. So much has happened, so much of emotional turmoil is going on and introspection is going on. So he gives a pause, and then he says, at any point in time, wherever you are, if you, at whatever you want, don't ask for that. So the clear instruction that Swami gave is, ekkadaina, eppudaina, edaina, wherever you are, whatever you want, don't ask for that. But ask that, Swami, I want only you. And pray that, I want only you. The moment you have that prayer, so God will look at you and he'll say, okay, now he's praying for me and my grace. I will see what is good for him. I will give what is good for him. And incidentally, my father says that many years later, when he was actually going through one of those books, he comes across this passage where sage Vasishtha, after severe, after long penance and tapasya, Lord Shiva appears in front of him. And Lord Shiva asks him, what do you want? And he says, I have everything. I have had your darshan, and I have got your darshan, and I have everything. I really don't have anything to ask you. And then Lord Shiva says, no, no, don't tell like that. He says that you may have everything, but what is the ideal thing that you should... Lord Shiva says, he says, I have everything. Then Lord Shiva says, don't say like that. Then he comes up with this question. He says, then you please tell me, what is the perfect prayer? What is it that I should ask you? What is it that I should... Then Lord Shiva gives the same answer. He says, don't ask for what you think is important or what you think you need. Ask for the Lord and ask for the Lord's grace. Then automatically what is good for you will be given to you. So it's the same answer which Swami kind of gave here, is the same answer which Lord Shiva gave to Vasishtha. So what it means to say is that desire, when you direct towards God, so you are actually asking for the Lord's grace and asking for His love, and that will take care of everything else.
Yeah. Even as you're saying that, I was just remembering that beautiful poem by Tagore. Must right. be from the Gitanjali.
Mm-hmm.
He writes there, no, this is how it goes. That I want thee, mm-hmm. only thee, mm-hmm. let my heart repeat without end. All desires that distract me day and night are false and empty to the core. As the night keeps hidden in the gloom the petition for light, even thus in the depth of my unconscious rings the cry, I want thee, only thee.
Only thee.
As the storm still seeks its end in peace, when it strikes against peace with all its might, even thus my rebellion strikes against thy love, and still its cry is, I want thee, only thee.
Beautiful.
Beautiful, no? That, yeah. That idea of turning everything towards God and, you know, praying only for that. Talking about Anandadayi, and, you know, there is that very beautiful episode when Swami comes to their house. I think one of those trips, Swami stays in the palace
okay.
in Mysore.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very upset.
Mm-hmm.
He's saying, Swami has come to Mysore and Swami is staying there and he's not coming to our house.
Mm-hmm.
So one day they go to the palace to have Swami's darshan.
Mm-hmm.
They stand at the gate for many hours and then mm-hmm. finally they come inside. They're very upset with Swami.
Mm.
That, you know, how can Swami come to Mysore and not come and visit us?
Mm.
They're so upset. And, you know, when they enter the palace, their heart melts. You know, they say, you know, Swami should stay in a place like this.
Mm.
Where he'll come and stay in our house. And, you know, mm. so inconvenient for Swami.
Mm.
So seeing the, you know, grandeur of the hall and the place and the thing, this is befitting Swami's,
right.
You know, so our Swami should stay in a place like this. And then Swami comes and speaks to them and gives them oranges and this and that. And then Swami says, I'll come to your house on this particular day.
Mm.
So then Swami comes. The whole day Swami spends there. You know, they make food for Swami. Swami eats. And then they say, Swami, now you're leaving. Mm. You'll forget us.
mm.
Right? You know, what do we do?
Mm.
And they might have had a sense of what is coming in the future.
Right.
Seeing Swami stay in the palace
mm.
and, you know, where you'll remember us. And that is when actually Swami writes that very beautiful song and gives it to them.
Yes.
And he says, you remember the song
mm.
and you sing the song,
mm.
then you will instantly be connected to Swami. You will be reminded of Swami and Swami will remember you.
Mm.
And actually the emotion of that song is, no, the discontent of a devotee.
Right.
Marichiti vemo madilo mammo. He said, Swami, you have forgotten us.
Mm.
In all your busy, abad bandavu danchu vintin, adarinchu mani vedu kuntin. He said, we heard that you are abad bandava and we thought you will listen to us and we came and you have forgotten us. Right? So Swami has kind of put in words and tune the even that anger and discontent of a devotee, which
right.
I'm sure all of us would have felt at some point in time. Swami says, even that you directed towards Swami.
Yeah.
And as you were telling about that, your father's experience, the other episode that came to my mind was one devotee was saying that, you know, in the spiritual path or in the path of devotion, you have to be awake to what is happening in your life.
Correct.
You know, be aware of how your life is going. He says, imagine you're going out to catch a bus to go to a different place.
Mm-hmm.
And you're running late. At that time, what you will be thinking? So, Swami, I should catch this bus. Swami, I should not miss the bus. Swami, the bus should be waiting for you. So, that becomes a prayer. So, in your mind, you are thinking that you catching that bus is right for you.
Mm.
And imagine you go there, something, the bus is delayed and it's waiting for you. You get in and you say, ah, I've got the bus.
Right.
Right. Imagine you miss the bus and then the next day you come to know that the bus met with an accident. Right? Then you say, I was not in the bus. So you're saying that, see, the emotion is same. One time you miss the bus, one time you catch the bus. The relief that you feel at the end, the peace that you feel at the end is the same. So in as Tagore puts it, in every restlessness, what is hidden is that desire for peace and calm.
Mm.
Right? So when you seek God, you're actually seeking that peace.
Right.
you go in front of Swami and saying, Swami, all these desires are there, but I don't know which of these desires fulfillment will lead me to peace, which of these will lead me to more restlessness and more such anger and desires, and more the cycle keeps going on. So I'm placing all of these in front of you. Fulfill those which will lead me to you.
Which
you think will lead me to you. So I think with that, dear listeners, we'll take a break. And what better way to take a break than by playing that very song.
Oh, which, beautiful. We have Swami, that same song.
Yes, we have that song recorded by those devotees. We'll listen to it. We'll continue this discussion on the other side of the song. Welcome back, dear listeners, and that's the beautiful song that we were making a reference to. And of course, we spoke in detail about that entire episode as part of our Satya to Sai series. And if you're interested in that, you can definitely go and look up that episode. Coming back to this beautiful discussion that we were going through, we went through all this discussion based on that one beautiful answer that Swami gave.
Exactly.
As Saprakash was saying, when you don't need anything other than this to define your life. You know what? Simple thing that Swami is saying, turn all your wishes and desires to God. So after that, I think the same person asked this question. Swami, what is the truth of the mind? How to use thought and the mind? And in response to that, Swami says, there is no mind. Just as cloth is seen as thread, then as cotton only, there is only God. God is like a perfect mirror. Your desires, thoughts and actions are perfectly reflected in that perfect mirror. which is God. When your desires, thoughts and actions are reflected back to you, you may think God sent them, but they are really your own. And then he further asks, but what to do about bad thoughts and desires? Swami says, human thoughts and desires. If you think I am human, then such human aspects of anger and jealousy will be reflected and will return to you. But you are not human. You are divine. You are God. Think and feel I am divine. Then you will think and feel only love for God. Only love, for God is love. Every place, everything is love. Love only.
Love only. So beautiful, so beautiful. And again, it is that kind of assertion that Swami wants us to live with. Like he would say, constant integrated awareness. What is that awareness? Be aware that I am divine. Right. I am divine. And I mean, the first, absolutely, Swami says, there is no mind. This, he would say, bundle of thoughts. And the moment these thoughts are separated, the threads are separated and the cotton is separated, then there is no mind at all.
Right, and that constant integrated awareness is what Krishna describes as sthita prajna. So I mean, say prajna is awareness. Mm-hmm. And sthita prajna is one who is constantly in that awareness.
In that awareness.
In fact, Swami had told the primary school children to learn that portion of the Gita, right?
Yes, yes. That, in fact, it starts from sthita prajna se kabhasha samanyasya se keshava sthitadi kim pravaseta kim asita prajeta kim. I think it is the 52nd or 54th
right,
shloka.
The second chapter.
Of the second chapter. Right. And of course the 12th chapter.
12th chapter.
That is the Bhakti Yoga. Swami would, you know, stand, and that scene is so beautiful, and he would stand in between the primary school students and the higher secondary school and the college students, and he would look at the primary school students and say, chant Bhagavad Gita.
Mm.
So then we would start. Mm. And then Swami would look at the other side and Swami said, you all don't know? Look at the college students, seniors, and say, you all don't know? See, learn from them.
Mm.
They know the Bhagavad Gita. And He would stand there and just sway to the shlokas being chanted. It's such a beautiful sight. And Swami would, somehow or the other, these shlokas have become, you know, ingrained because of chanting them again and again. Like Bhakti Yoga, if you take any of the shloka, Yomad Bhakta Same Priya, what are the qualities of a person who is dear to me? Swami is saying that, he is answering it in detail. Adveshta sarva bhutanam maitraha karuna evacha. These are all list of qualities.
Right.
And such a beautiful, it's almost like, you know, Swami used to say once, in his discourses he has said several times, not once, but he said, you need not know the composition of the medicine. You are having an ailment.
Right.
You take the medicine and you are cured. But a jnani will want to know what is
how it works.
Composition of the medicine, how it works. So either you follow the path of bhakti and say, the Lord is giving me this medicine, I'm taking it over, that's it. Or you follow the path of wisdom and you go into it, try to inquire, try to find out, and then you come out with your own understanding. So both these ways are there. So Swami says, there is no mind.
Right.
Coming back to his answer, he says, there is no mind, and it's that is, of course, the ultimate truth. And what is the kind of assertion when Swami says, think that I am divine. Think that I am divine. And be in that awareness. Then there is love only. In fact, in this book, it's a beautiful book called God in Action. Satya Sai Baba, God in Action, which is a compilation of talks by Professor Kasturi.
Right.
Who's a biographer of Swami. And there he recollects this episode from the 1968 World Conference. And in one of his talks, so he's talking about that whole incident. And he says, I was very nervous whether I'll be able to do justice to Swami's discourse. Because there's one of, in 1968, and it was in Mumbai, Dharma Kshetra. Right. And Swami says, never before has such a conference been held in the presence of an avatar. And he says, that made me all the more nervous. And then he says, I am going to announce myself today. Swami says, I am announcing who I am. And then Swami says, I am the very embodiment of God, of all forms and names that man has been worshipping all over the world. You cannot understand my reality. I am deluding you into the belief that I am human by my acts, words, bhajans and songs. You must wait for the moment when you will see at least a facet of this great phenomenon. So that is the great and glorious declaration that Swami has made. If that is what divinity is, and Swami says you are also divine, live in that awareness, live in that assertion, live in that level of aware, constant integrated awareness, I think we have a long way to go from... this is the journey. Mm-hmm. This is the journey, this is the path, and this is the goal.
You know, talking about this statement that Swami is making, Arvind would often quote, when Swami had asked that in one of the sessions, Swami was having with Central Trust Day with the Sai Sanidhi boys, Swami asked any questions, and he asked this question, Swami, isn't it an egoistic thing to say that I am God?
Right.
And Swami said, no, that is not ego, that is the truth.
Mm.
Swami said, you know, how sweetly Swami said, it is not ego, it is the truth. And of course, I think Swami went on to say, it is not merely assertion, that assertion should reflect in the action.
Translate in every action.
In every action.
Every word, every action, right. Every thought. You should, in fact, Swami explained, he said, you should think, will God think like this?
Right.
Will God talk like this? Will God do this?
Right.
That is the awareness.
Absolutely.
Here, another point which Swami really brings out is the concept of mirror. He says, God is like a perfect mirror. Your desires, thoughts and actions are perfectly reflected in that perfect mirror, which is God. When your desires, thoughts and actions are reflected back to you, you may think God sent them, but they are really your own. So, I mean, the concept of God being Sakshi Bhutam, a witness, a clean mirror. See, that's a very beautiful concept, and because he's attributeless, he's nameless, he's formless, but what you think, again, it's our perception, and the more and more, yantamatramu yavvaru talchina antamatrame neevu. So, as we evolve and grow in our understanding, then God reveals those aspects to us. In fact, again, coming back to this beautiful book, Satya Sai Baba, God in Action, which is a compilation of talks by Professor N. Kasturi. He says, we have our human parameters to describe a person, we have a set of parameters. Okay. Then he says, if we want to understand Swami, he says, one of the methods which I use is I give Swami a form and I tell Swami to fill the form. So he has a very beautiful way of narration. Mm-hmm. And I think people who have heard him live must have really enjoyed it. And so this is just the text version of his speech, but it's so beautiful. And he says, the method I use is to give Swami a form. And we ask Swami to fill up this form. So now, what is this form? So there are 9 points. See, on one side, Swami says, I am your mirror. And we project certain attributes to him, certain qualities to him. And we say, this is what defines him. But at the same time, he has his answer of what who he really is, what he really is. So he says, the first column in the form is, what is your name? And then Swami says, I have no particular name. All names are mine. So he says, yes, we know Satya Sai Baba is a name given to this form. But he says, if you call me Jesus, if you call me Allah, if you call me Buddha, I answer to all the names. And then he says very beautifully, he says, if you stand in front of the altar and say, Swami Navadu, Swami, you are mine. And then Swami says, I am thine. Nenu Nivadu, I am yours. So his name is, all names are mine. And if you call him and say, you are mine, Swami responds, I am thine.
Whenever you say this, all names are his.
Right.
One thing that comes to my mind is Geeta Mohan Ram's episode of that Hispanic lady she meets during a Broadway.
Right.
Of course, the episode everybody knows. The most beautiful thing is, you know, when she comes back and Swami asks about that.
Right.
How was the Broadway show? And then Swami says there was no transplant. That child is fine.
Right.
And, you know, in her exuberance, she tells Swami, Swami, she didn't even know Swami.
Mm.
You know, Swami appeared in her dream, but she didn't know. And she was worshipping Jesus all her life.
Mm.
In a very matter-of-fact manner, Swami said, Ye perayte yemi.
Beautiful.
You know, one thing is to say that all names are His, but this is a living proof of that. You know, so sweetly Swami said, Ye perayte yemi. I will come to any name.
In fact, Kasturi uncle again recollects this beautiful incident of a lady from San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
He says she was alone in the house and she had fallen down from her bed or she had got fits or something like that.
Okay.
And she was in a very helpless situation in the middle of the night. And she didn't even know whom to call out to. And she said, is there anybody? Anybody who is there? Can anybody help me? Somebody, is there anybody there who can help me? And I believe Swami appeared in her house and Swami appeared and held her and lifted her and Swami said, don't shout, don't make so much noise. And then, of course, later, I think she is searched and came to Prashanti and that's how Professor Kasturi narrates this incident. And he says, she didn't even know a God. She just asked, if you need me, you deserve me. So that is a beautiful thing. So the first column in the form is name. And then the second column is gender. And then Swami says, when amongst men, I am a man. When amongst women, I am a woman. When amongst children, I am a child. When I am alone, I am divine. So he says, gender column has to be left blank. It cannot be fathomed. Then he says, the third column is age. He says, Bhagwan is ageless. If you say that he is the one who has actually created this universe, then he is billions of years, so that column, the width in that column is not sufficient to write his age. That is what very humorously Kasturi uncle says. That column width is very small, so it's very difficult to write, fit in his entire age in that column. And then he says, what is his date of birth? Swami says, I was never born. I'm always present. So he says, on the level, on the physical level, yes, we celebrate Swami's birthday. We have the celebration, which he says, the devotees, you all wanted, so you are doing it. But you ask me, what is my age? I am never born. Sanatanam. So I am always eternal. And then he says, who are your parents? The next column is, who are your parents? Name your parents. And then Swami says, I choose my parents. You all, by the laws of nature, you are born to your parents, but I choose my parents. And then he narrates a very beautiful episode, in the sense, gives a very nice insight. He says, when Swami's father passed away, and many people sent their respects, and they said, may his soul rest in peace. And he said, being the editor of Sanatan Sarthi, I published some of them. And Swami looked at it and he said, how can the soul rest in peace? Soul is always peaceful. He says, people who have made such a wish, they don't understand what is soul. The soul is always peaceful. And the soul was in at peace even when he was alive. The soul is at peace even when he is gone. The soul is always peaceful. And then Swami says, yes, of course, he had this blessing to be called as the father of this avatar. And so did the mother. But then how did Swami refer to them? Swami referred to them as Abbai and Ammai. He said, this boy and this girl. So, Kasturi uncle says that, yes, for the world, these are parents of Swami. But for Swami, they are Abbai and Ammai. So, because for him, all are equal.
Right.
Then he says, where is his residence? The next column is, where is his residence? Is it Prashantaralyam, Vrindavan, Kodaikanal? He says, my permanent residence is your heart. And he says very beautifully, he says, even if you bring others into your heart, and you crowd your heart with everybody, I will come as the voice of conscience and kick out one by one. I will not allow anybody else to occupy your heart because that is my permanent residence. He says, that is the love of Swami. And he says, that is his residence. What is his possession? What is his property? Swami says, my devotees are my property. My students are my property. So he has always said, these buildings, and Kasturi Uncle goes on to say that people, when they come to Prashanthi Nilayam, they see these buildings, they see all this, and they think, oh, this is all Swami's property. But he says that in a letter to Mr. Venkaya, who was a Telugu pundit, Swami says, you want to know who I am? You want to know what is about my property? You are my property, not all this. This is only a shelter to you, to welcome you and to put you together. And this is a very beautiful purpose. Mm-hmm. It's almost like defining what Swami is doing here in Prashanthi Nilayam. He says, so that a number of stones put together, rolled and rolled, lose their angularities and become round. So he says he puts all of you in together, and you have, each one has his own angularities. And so he says all that is smoothened out because of constant interaction, constant staying here in his presence. So this is to shelter you, to shape you, to mold you. Everything here is for you. So what is his possession and property? Devotees are his possession and property. And then what is his profession? So he says, what is his profession? And he says, his profession, as declared by Swami, is to grant bhukti and mukti.
Mm-hmm.
He says, bhukti and mukti. Bhukti is to have a comfortable life. I bless you. I give you what you want so that you may want what I have come to give.
Mm-hmm.
So bhukti is comfortable life. And mukti is liberation. But he says, but there is a catch here. I grant you bhukti and mukti, but to whom? He says, to bhaktulaku. I grant bhukti and mukti to a devotee. He says, amidst the crowd of 20,000 or 30,000 people, Swami says, I am still searching for a true devotee. Where is a true devotee? So he says, if you qualify yourself as a devotee, then he grants you bhukti and mukti. That is his profession. And the last column is, what is his hobby? He says, what is Swami's hobby? And he says, bhakti nosagi rakshinchu shakti mayadu. So he says, bhakti nosagi. So I grant devotion. Bhakti to you. I grant devotion to you and save you. So for those who are lost in this world, he comes and grants devotion, and that is his hobby. He grants you devotion and then saves you. So he says these are 9 points in the form. And on one side we have a certain perception that this is what defines Swami. But these are his answers of who he really is. So anytime we look at him other than what he has defined of himself, it is just like a mirror. It is our own thoughts, our own, you know, limitations, our own attributions that we give to the Lord.
Right. And, you know, even as you were saying that, again, going back to the 8th chapter of the Gita, which I just completed.
Right.
There, you know, there's this very famous statement that Krishna makes. Swami has also quoted so many times, where he says, Tasmat sarva kaleshu ma manusmara yudhyacha.
Right.
He says, constantly think of me and go through this struggle called life. There, you know, the word anusmara is very interesting, because some of the commentators, Adi Shankara himself speaks about that.
Mm-hmm.
Anusmara means constant contemplation. As Swami would say, you know, anusmara is taking that every moment of your life, you're thinking of God. Anu, Swami would say.
Right.
That every atom of your body gets saturated with thoughts of me. That much you think of me.
Mm.
But anusmara, the word itself, means the right kind of contemplation of God.
Oh.
Right? You think of God the way he has to be thought of.
Mm-hmm.
You don't think of him just as another entity who is having the same anger like you,
right,
same favoritism like you.
Correct.
Swami would say that, you know, I don't have all that. You think that Swami likes these people, Swami likes students more. Swami said, I have no such qualities. So Anusmara is also trying to contemplate on God in his true nature, in his true this one. And then actually in the following shlokas, Krishna gives and Swami lists them out in Gita Vaini. Every one of those appellations of God, Swami explains. So in that he says, Kavim, Puranam, and Sarvadhataram, you know, the one who is the basis for everything. So all of those, when you really contemplate on God and try to, like as very beautifully put by Professor Kasturi, you know, these are answers that you yourself can derive on.
Correct.
And then when you see what is Swami's name, you know, we have enough quote-unquote proof in front of us that every name he responds to.
Exactly.
When you think of where is he, I mean, is there a devotee who has not experienced that he is the one who is inside the heart?
Correct. Right?
You know, how many times there is this very beautiful episode, I'm sure listeners would have heard this so many times from me. There is this episode of one of the devotees of Swami, I forgot her name. She used to be the vice chancellor of the university in Mysore. So she had narrated this episode during one of her talks in the summer course.
Right.
She was sitting in the Purnachandra auditorium and there was a program going on. It was a music program by the famous singer S. Janaki.
Okay.
Right. And she had this ability to sing in multiple voices. So like an old lady, like a small child.
Okay.
That was one of her you know, unique abilities. So she was singing a song, very interesting song. The song is depicting a life of a very pious devotee. So she would go by walk to Tirupati every year and have darshan. And over the years, she becomes very old. And she's not able to make that trip. So somewhere along the pathway, she becomes very tired and she sits down. And Lord Venkateshwara comes in the form of a, you know, small boy.
Okay.
And takes her along. You know, he first tries to dissuade her. He said, at this age, why you want to go all the way? And things like that. She says, no, 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 I have to go and see. So the boy takes the, you know, the old lady and takes her. And then she realizes that it's Venkateshwara who has come.
Okay.
So she used to perform this in the form of a song.
Okay.
Singing in different voices, like that of the old lady, like Venkateshwara is singing, like the little child is speaking and all that. So this program was being performed. Swami was sitting in the D, where he would usually sit, and he's seeing the program. And this lady is sitting somewhere in the middle of the Purnachandra auditorium. And, you know, even as she's seeing that, she says, she just closes her eyes and she says, Swami, that lady called and you came. He says, now I'm calling you. Will you come? You know, in her mind, she's thinking, just a few minutes later, no, she hears some hush and she finds Swami parting the crowd and coming straight to where she was sitting.
My God, how beautiful.
And you know, in that commotion, she forgot what is happening and Swami comes and stands in front of her. So she says, you called me. Right? So when you say that he is, where is he? Swami would say, where is you know, where is Swami, sir?
Correct.
You know, after an episode where Swami reveals his omniscience, omnipotence, Swami would very playfully say that, where is Swami, sir? You
know? In fact, when you're giving this explanation of trying to understand the Lord's form in the way it actually should be, what is the significance? What is the... See, because... all our ancients, they have made it very simple for the common man. Like, for example, if you take the Sri Suktam, if you take the form of Mother Devi, and you say, oh, she's decked with gold, she's decked with silver, and this and that. But if you see the inner meaning, it's very beautiful. They say, gold represents the brilliance of tapas. The light that you get when you do tapas, that is the brilliance of gold. And when, so when she's adorned with gold, she's adorned with that brilliance. And then when you say moon, when she say the silver, it says that is the control, the peace which she embodies. So, I mean, the form of the Lord, like Swami would give the inner meaning of if you take the form of Lord Shiva, and he would say there is no difference between the form of Lord Shiva and Lord Narayana.
Mm-hmm.
Because he would say the five elements which are represented with Lord Shiva are also represented with Narayana. So these are different ways of looking at the form of the Lord. So Lord Shiva, Ganga is there. There is control over the water, an element of water. Where is Lord Narayana resting? In the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
So he says the moon, and then here he says the lotus that is holding the... So he has given in many discourses the beautiful similarities. These were all symbolic. The form of the Lord is beautiful. You can relate to that aspect of the Lord, and you can worship and you can love that form. At the same time, the next level of turning your desire towards God is to understand what that form means and to relate with the formless, which is the ultimate, way in which God is. The God is in the unmanifest form, which is the ultimate state. But then he takes on a particular form to come to the devotee. There is no difference between the path of bhakti and path of jnana, or the worship of the formful and the worship of... That is what the 12th chapter starts with. Evam satata yuktaye. He says, which is greater? The path worshipping the formful aspect or the formless aspect? And the Lord says, it's easier to worship the form. It's very difficult. The path of trying to contemplate on the formless is very difficult. But that is also a path.
Right. So I think even as you were talking about the Sri Suktam, dear listeners, we'll conclude afternoon satsang here, because the next program is Veda Jignasa.
Okay.
And Brother Ganesh is discussing the Sri Suktam and the inner meaning of that. So we are going to continue that discussion, but not me and Sai Prakash. Ganesh will take that forward in the next episode. We'll conclude as always with a beautiful song on the other end of it. As I said, Brother Ganesh will join you for the next program, Veda Jignasa. Till we meet you all next week, take care, keep safe. Jai Sai Ram.
जाऊं मैं कहां भगवन आपके सिवा, जाऊं तो जाऊं मैं कहां भगवन आपके सिवा, सब कुछ मेरा बस आप है, सब कुछ मेरा बस आप है, कोई नहीं आपके सिवा। जाऊं तो जाऊं मैं के सिवा, सब कुछ मेरा बस आप है, सब कुछ मेरा बस आप है, कोई नहीं आपके सिवा। जाऊं तो जाऊं मैं के सिवा सब कुछ मेरा बस आप है सब कुछ मेरा बस आप है कोई नहीं आपके सिवा जाऊं मैं कहां भगवन आपके सिवा जाऊं मैं कहां भगवन आपके सिवा सब कुछ मेरा बस आप है सब कुछ मेरा